Picture a 12-year-old obsessed with hip-hop, practicing dance moves with his friends, dreaming of performing at a talent show. Now imagine that same child, 2 years later, slitting a man's throat in a killing contest and winning. This isn't fiction. It's the true story of Ismail Bia, one of approximately 300,000 children forced into combat worldwide. His memoir reveals something we'd rather not face: how quickly innocence can be weaponized, how easily a child who memorizes rap lyrics can learn to kill without remorse. Before war arrived, Bia was just a boy in Sierra Leone who loved the Sugar Hill Gang and wore baggy jeans to look cool. He left home casually one morning for that talent show, not bothering to say goodbye because he'd be back tomorrow. He never saw his family again. What transforms an ordinary child into a soldier who feels nothing while taking a life? The answer is more disturbing than we imagine, because it reveals how fragile the line between humanity and violence truly is. When rebels attacked Bia's village in 1993, he was 16 miles away, waiting to perform. News arrived through breathless schoolchildren. The Revolutionary United Front had launched an offensive. Parents and children searched desperately for each other. Nobody found anyone. When Bia tried returning home, the road told the story. A man carried his dead son, believing him alive. A woman clutched her baby, shot in the back. He turned around, understanding home no longer existed. For months, Bia and his friends became ghosts, running between villages, surviving on raw cassava that cramped their stomachs and blurred their vision. They witnessed rebels dancing as they fired into crowds. Each gunshot seemed to cling to the beat of my heart, Bia recalls. They dodged between bushes, jumping over corpses as grenades exploded. Hunger drove them to steal food from a 5-year-old boy. Survival erased guilt. There was no room for it anymore. The boy's worst nightmare materialized when 3 young rebels, none older than 21, captured them. These fighters wore stolen Adidas sneakers and multiple watches on both wrists, grotesque displays of looted wealth. At a village where other captives huddled, the rebels positioned flashlights on rice-pounding mortars and began their selection. An old man was forced down with a gun to his head. The rebels laughed at his trembling and forced the captives to laugh too. I laughed loudly but was crying internally, my limbs trembling uncontrollably, Bia writes. When they announced they would initiate new recruits by forcing them to kill the others, Junior was chosen. The brothers exchanged one terrible look, Junior's eyes red from holding back tears, his fists clenched. Just as execution seemed certain, gunshots erupted nearby. In the chaos, the captives scattered into the forest. Bia hid behind a log until he heard familiar whispers. His brother and friends had escaped in the same direction. They reunited silently, too traumatized to speak. After losing Junior, Bia spent over a month alone in the forest, sleeping in a tree with branches woven like a hammock. He survived on unfamiliar fruit that birds ate, taking the risk that it was safe for human consumption. The isolation became overwhelming as he clung to his father's words, "If you are alive, there is hope for a better day." When he finally joined 6 other boys, including 3 from his school, they became the 7 Boys, suspected everywhere of being rebels. Fishermen restrained them and forced them to run barefoot across scorching sand that severely burned their feet. In another village, they were humiliated before a chief who called them little devils. When Bia's rap cassettes fell out, the chief ordered them to perform or face execution. Bia danced and mimed lyrics until the chief's expression softened, recognizing they were just children. When government soldiers picked up Bia and his companions, relief turned to dread. "We need strong men and boys to help us fight these rebels." Training began immediately, crawling silently, taking cover, responding to hand signals. "Words could cost you a bullet in the head," warned Corporal Gaddafi. They stabbed banana trees with bayonets, visualizing the enemy. The youngest recruits, 7-year-old Sheku and 11-year-old Josiah, needed stools to hold their AK-47s. Before their first battle, soldiers gave them white tablets to boost their energy, drugs that kept them awake and numb. During the firefight, Bia froze until blood splashed his face as a soldier beside him died. When he saw his friend Musa's blood-covered head, something inside him shattered. He began shooting furiously, killing everyone in sight. Afterward, he couldn't eat. A nightmare made him empty 30 rounds inside his tent. The corporal gave him more capsules, and he stayed awake for a week. I had no problem shooting after that. For 2 years, Bia lived as a child soldier, fighting, taking drugs, and watching war movies like Rambo and Commando. He smoked marijuana and sniffed brown, cocaine mixed with gunpowder. Killing became as easy as drinking water. In January 1996, UNICEF workers arrived at Bia's base. The lieutenant selected 15 boys, including the 15-year-old Bia, ordering them to lay down their weapons. At the rehabilitation center, pressed sheets and toothbrushes seemed meaningless to children who'd slept in the bush with only their weapons. Physical withdrawal manifested violently. His hands trembled uncontrollably. Migraines felt like a blacksmith hammering in my head with white-hot iron. And his friend Al-Hajjah punched concrete pillars until his knuckles were bloody pulp. The turning point came through a nurse named Esther, who gave him a Walkman with Run DMC and suggested they become friends. When he told her brutal war stories, hoping to frighten her away, she said with tears in her eyes, "None of what happened was your fault." As he shared more, he began believing her. He started writing lyrics, performing at talent shows, speaking about rehabilitation. After 8 months, his uncle Tommy offered him a home, embracing him and saying, "You are my son." Bia's return to civilian life was fragile. Students avoided him after learning his past, though his uncle provided stability. Then a May 25, 1997 military coup shattered everything. His uncle died in his arms after hospitals closed. Fearing forced recruitment, Bia contacted Laura Sims, a storyteller he'd met at a UN conference, who agreed to take him in. On October 31, 1997, he fled Freetown on darkened buses, crossing military checkpoints where soldiers extorted money, eventually reaching Guinea and then America. Even in New York's safety, nightmares haunted him. "I am pushing a rusty wheelbarrow through a town reeking of blood," he writes, describing recurring dreams where he unwraps a body in white sheets, only to find his own face staring back. Yet he completed his education and became an advocate for children affected by war, speaking at the United Nations and international forums. His story reveals both the darkest depths of human experience and the remarkable resilience of the human spirit, proof that even those who've committed terrible acts under coercion can find their way back to humanity.